you finally land that big promotion, right? Or that massive new job you've been waiting for.
Oh, yeah, the dream scenario.
Exactly. You show up on day one, you are completely fired up, coffee in hand, ready to just conquer the world. And then you sit at your desk for like 2.5 weeks, staring at a blank wall,
Just waiting.
just waiting.
Yeah.
Because IT hasn't granted you access to the team's shared drive or, the main database. You literally cannot do your job.
Yeah, and on the flip side, think about the opposite scenario, which is honestly worse.
Got
You leave a company, you move on with your life, and then, I don't know, 6 months later, you idly click a bookmark on your personal laptop.
Oh, wow.
And you realize your login to your former employer's internal server is still wide open.
That is terrifying. But I mean, does that actually happen that often?
It happens far more often than anyone in corporate security wants to admit, honestly. We have this illusion that enterprise data is locked inside this impenetrable digital vault, you know.
Right, with lasers and guards.
Exactly. But the reality for a lot of massive organizations is that the vault door is just propped open with a brick simply because someone in HR, forgot to email someone in IT to revoke a credential when an employee walked out the door for the last time.
Wow. And that operational chaos, I mean, the absolute nightmare of managing who gets the keys, what those keys actually open, and then aggressively taking those keys back when they are no longer needed. That is what we are doing a deep dive on today.
It's a huge topic.
It really is. We are looking at the massive high-stakes world of identity and access management, or IAM, and specifically identity governance.
Right.
And our source material today is this really comprehensive 2026 interview prep guide for engineers who are working with SailPoint, which, from what I understand, is one of the absolute biggest platforms in this industry.
Yeah, it's a giant. And this document, it is incredibly revealing. I mean, it's essentially a blueprint of the modern corporate security apparatus.
Right, it's not just like a user manual.
No, not at all. It's more of a technical interrogation. It maps out the exact problems systems architects have to solve to prevent a 50,000-person multinational corporation from either, grinding to a halt due to bureaucracy or hemorrhaging sensitive data due to sloppy access controls.
Okay, let's unpack this
Yeah.
because I want to skip past the basics, if that's all right.
Sure.
I mean, we all know what authentication is, right? Passwords, biometrics, multi-factor authentication.
The stuff we use every day.
Exactly. That just proves you are who you say you are. But getting past the front door isn't the actual problem for a massive enterprise, right? The bottleneck is everything that happens after you walk into the lobby.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Because authentication is just the first of four foundational pillars in IAM. And as you said, it's the easiest one to solve.
So what's the second pillar?
The second is authorization. So once the system verifies you are the person typing in the password, what files, servers, and applications are you actually allowed to touch? Yeah, authentication gets you in the building. Authorization determines whether your badge opens the door to the server room or just the cafeteria.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. And the third pillar is administration, which honestly sounds like the actual nightmare part of this.
Oh, it is. It really is.
Because if a company has, say, 100,000 employees globally, and people are constantly getting promoted, fired, transferred, or put on temporary task forces every single hour.
Manual administration is just impossible.
Right. Like having IT guys typing out individual permissions.
It's entirely unscalable. Administration is the mechanical engine of managing all those identities and roles at scale. And if that engine fails, you immediately run afoul of the fourth pillar, which is audit and compliance.
Oh, right, the regulators.
Exactly. You have to be able to mathematically prove to a government regulator or, an independent auditor that your access rules are actually being enforced.
So you need a paper trail.
A massive digital paper trail. You need a system that tracks every single digital footstep, proving that no unauthorized user ever touched a sensitive financial database. And SailPoint and platforms like it, they're designed to sit across all of those pillars and automate the governance.
So before we get into the plumbing of how they actually fix this,
Yeah.
we need to understand how these systems visualize a human being in the first place, right?
Yeah, the core data model.
Exactly. The source details the philosophy behind this with what they call the four I's: identity, intelligence, integration, and insight.
Right.
And from what I read, identity is just mapping who has the access. Intelligence asks why they have it, like, is it a valid business need or just a legacy mistake?
Which is a huge issue.
Oh, I bet. And then integration is the physical linking of hundreds of different corporate software systems. And finally, insight is the continuous risk analysis. But to do all of that, the platform builds something called the Identity Cube. What is that exactly?
So the Identity Cube is the absolute core of the data model. To understand why it's necessary, you have to look at the historical vulnerability of fragmented user data.
Fragmented how?
Well, before centralized governance, you were essentially a ghost scattered across a dozen different databases. You might be, you know, Jane Doe in the HR software, JDoe88 in the email server, and maybe user 744 in some ancient Oracle database.
And none of those systems inherently know they're looking at the exact same human being.
Exactly. So when Jane Doe quits, HR deletes her, but user 744 just sits there in the Oracle database forever.
I see. It's like having 50 different ID cards for 50 different rooms, but the Identity Cube changes that. It's almost like a dynamic, magical digital passport. Instead of those 50 ID cards, you have one master dossier that automatically updates the moment you change departments.
What's fascinating here is how the Identity Cube acts as a single, multidimensional relational database that solves that exact fragmentation. It acts as a massive central ledger.
So it's actively pulling data.
Yeah, it constantly pulls every connected system in the enterprise, pulls all those disparate accounts, and links them to one master dossier. So administrators can look at your single Identity Cube and instantly see every single digital door you have the ability to open across the entire global enterprise.
Wow.
It is the definitive single source of truth.
Okay, so we have this perfect central ledger storing who everyone is. But, I mean, a ledger doesn't actually open doors. How does the system distribute the currency of access?
That's where we get into the rules.
Right, because the source spends a lot of time differentiating between entitlements and roles, and this is where role-based access control, or RBAC, comes into play.
Yeah, RBAC is crucial. An entitlement is the most granular level of permission you can have. Think of it as a specific action on a specific target.
Like what? Give me an example.
So an entitlement might be read-only access to the Q3 marketing database, or, you know, execute privileges on the payroll wire transfer application.
Okay, but managing individual entitlements for 100,000 employees sounds like a fast track to madness. I mean, if a new HR manager needs 400 specific database permissions just to do their job, nobody is manually clicking 400 checkboxes.
Which is exactly why entitlements are bundled into roles. A role is just a collection of entitlements built around a specific job function.
Ah.
So instead of assigning 400 permissions individually, the system assigns the user the role of senior HR manager, and the system automatically unpacks and deploys the 400 underlying entitlements.
That makes a lot of sense. And the source breaks down how users actually end up with these entitlements into three categories. You have direct entitlements, which are assigned to a specific person individually outside of any role, usually for like a temporary one-off project.
Right, the exceptions.
Yeah. Then you have indirect entitlements, which you receive specifically because you were assigned a role, like we just talked about.
Exactly.
But the third one, inherited entitlements, is really interesting to me. That relies on a hierarchy, right? Like, if I get promoted to VP of sales, I don't just get the VP permissions. I automatically inherit all the entitlements belonging to the regional manager role beneath me because I still need to see their dashboards.
Exactly. The system completely understands the organizational chart and cascades permissions downwards. And deploying all of this is called provisioning.
Provisioning. Okay.
Yeah. Manual provisioning is the archaic help desk ticket system where a human types in commands. Automated provisioning is the governance platform seeing a state change in the Identity Cube, like your promotion to VP, and instantly talking to the target applications to grant the new access.
I have to push back on this, though.
Oh, okay.
Because wrapping everyone into neat little static roles sounds great in theory, but human beings don't fit in boxes. What if someone has a weird hybrid job?
That happens a lot.
Right. Let's say I'm an accountant, but because I know how to use Photoshop, I help the marketing team design financial graphics on Fridays. If the enterprise relies strictly on static roles, doesn't the system just break? Do the IT guys have to build a custom accounting marketing hybrid role just for me?
That rigid static approach is exactly why legacy IAM implementations failed, honestly. They just turned back into manual ticket pushing.
So how do they fix it?
This is why the distinction between static roles and dynamic roles is critical in modern platforms. A static role is manually assigned and sits there until someone manually revokes it. A dynamic role is vastly superior because it is assigned automatically by the system based on real-time conditional logic.
Oh, so the system is constantly reading my HR profile attributes.
Yes. If your department attribute says accounting, you get the baseline accounting role. But if you get added to a secondary project code labeled marketing design, the system dynamically grants you the marketing role.
And when I'm done with the project?
The second that project code drops off your profile, the marketing access automatically vanishes. It requires zero human intervention to grant or revoke.
That is wild. But how do companies even figure out what these roles should be in the first place? If an enterprise has been around for 50 years, their access permissions are just a tangled web of historical exceptions and favors. The source talks about role mining. Does role mining actually fix that, or does it just look at a giant mess and automate the mess?
Well, that is the danger of a bad implementation, sure, but true role mining is heavily analytical. It doesn't just copy the existing mess.
What does it do then?
It analyzes the historical chaos across thousands of employees and looks for high-confidence statistical patterns.
Like AI pattern recognition.
Essentially, yes. It might analyze 500 people with the title financial analyst and discover that while they collectively hold thousands of random permissions, 95% of them share the exact same core 40 entitlements.
Oh, wow.
Right. So the system flags that and suggests, hey, this 95% overlap is your true baseline role. The rest is just noise and exception. It allows architects to build clean, efficient profiles out of decades of garbage data.
Getting people the right access quickly is great for productivity, but here's where it gets really interesting. Taking access away is the actual security imperative.
Mm.
Giving access is a customer service problem. Removing access is an enterprise survival problem.
Absolutely. Because excessive access is the leading vector for insider threats, ransomware propagation, and massive data breaches.
So how do they stop that?
You have to shift the paradigm to a zero-trust security architecture. Historically, corporate networks operated like a castle with a moat, you know?
Yeah.
If you managed to get past the firewall and onto the corporate VPN, the system assumed you were a trusted employee and just let you roam the hallways.
Zero trust means the moat doesn't matter. The mantra is, never trust, always verify.
Precisely. It replaces the moat with continuous micro-segmentation and behavioral evaluation. Even if you are an authenticated employee sitting at a desk in the corporate headquarters, the system continuously evaluates your context.
What does that look like in practice?
Well, if your identity cube says your role is marketing copywriter, but your account suddenly attempts to run an SQL query on the core financial database.
Which a copywriter has no business doing.
Exactly. A zero-trust architecture doesn't care that you're inside the network. It flags the anomaly, blocks the query, and potentially severs your access entirely in real time.
Man, that's strict. And the source outlines strict internal controls to prevent intentional internal fraud, too. The most prominent one is segregation of duties, or SOD.
Yeah, SOD is huge for compliance.
I loved this part. Think of the old Cold War movies with the nuclear submarines. To launch a missile, you need two different officers to turn two different keys on opposite sides of the room at the exact same time.
Right, so one rogue officer can't start a war.
Exactly. One compromised person cannot trigger a disaster. Segregation of duties applies that exact two-key mechanism to corporate workflows.
The quintessential example the interview guy provides is accounts payable fraud.
Walk me through that one.
So a governance platform must be hard-coded to prevent a single identity cube from holding both the entitlement to approve a vendor invoice and the entitlement to release payment for an invoice.
Because if I have both, I can just spin up a fake shell company, write a fake invoice, approve it myself, and wire company funds into my own bank account before the CFO even wakes up.
Exactly. You'd be turning both peas yourself. So if a system administrator accidentally attempts to assign you a role that violates that segregation of duties policy, the platform immediately detects the conflict.
It blocks it.
It blocks the provisioning entirely and logs a policy violation.
Okay, but permissions still drift over time, right?
Hmm.
I mean, someone gets put on a temporary task force, they get special access, and 3 years later, no one ever took it away. How does a massive enterprise clean house?
They do it through access certification campaigns.
What are those?
These are mandatory scheduled audits, usually quarterly or annually, where business managers are forced to look at a dashboard of their direct reports. The dashboard lists every single application and database those employees can touch.
Sounds serious.
It is, but it's necessary. The manager must legally attest line by line whether the access is still required for the job.
Oh, I see. So it pushes the security burden out of IT and onto the actual business leaders who know what their employees are doing.
Exactly. And it is the primary mechanism for catching orphaned accounts.
Orphaned accounts. We briefly touched on that earlier.
Yeah. An orphaned account is a massive vulnerability. It's an active credential in a target system that is no longer tied to an active, validated human in the identity cube. Usually they belong to former employees or third-party contractors whose contracts expired.
They are essentially silent, invisible doors left wide open for hackers to walk through.
Yep. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, access certifications and enforcing segregation of duties aren't just IT best practices. They are heavily enforced legal mandates.
Like government regulations.
Exactly. Under regulations like the Sarbanes-Oxley Act in the U.S. or GDPR in Europe, publicly traded companies must prove the integrity of their financial and data controls. If an external auditor discovers orphaned accounts with read access to customer data, the regulatory fines can run into the hundreds of millions.
Wow. Okay, so we've covered the logic, the policies, the rules, but I want to talk about the plumbers.
The plumbers.
Yeah, I want to look under the hood at how this actually works physically. Because this central platform, this brain, has to talk to an incredibly chaotic ecosystem.
It really does.
It has to talk to Microsoft Active Directory, modern cloud apps like Salesforce, and then some deeply archaic 25-year-old mainframe running in the basement that the company's too terrified to turn off. How does it physically execute the provisioning?
Right. So the physical bridge between the governance platform and the target systems is achieved through connectors.
Connectors. Like physical cables.
No, software. A connector is the software conduit that translates the commands. SailPoint and similar platforms come with hundreds of out-of-the-box connectors for standard systems, Azure, AWS, SAP. They plug in via standard REST APIs and immediately know how to read and write data.
Okay, but what about that 25-year-old mainframe in the basement that definitely doesn't have a modern API? The source mentions using something called Bean Shell.
Ah, Bean Shell. That is where the heavy lifting comes in. Bean Shell is a lightweight Java-based scripting language.
Okay.
When a company has a highly customized legacy application that speaks a proprietary language, a systems architect has to write a custom Bean Shell script.
So it's like a translator.
It essentially acts as a bespoke translator, teaching the modern identity governance platform how to send the specific archaic commands required to create or disable an account on that legacy mainframe.
And once those connectors are wired up, the platform executes aggregation tasks. Which, from my understanding, is the act of vacuuming up all the raw data from the connected systems and pulling it into the identity cubes.
That's right.
But the source distinguishes between full aggregation and incremental aggregation. Why not just run a full aggregation every 5 minutes to make sure your central ledger is completely perfect?
Because the compute cost would be absolutely staggering.
Really? How bad could it be?
Well, a full aggregation forces the platform to query every single account and permission across the entire enterprise network. If you have 100,000 employees and 500 applications, a full aggregation might take 18 hours of continuous processing just to build the baseline.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you simply can't run that constantly without degrading network performance.
Exactly.
So you rely on incremental aggregation for the day-to-day operations.
Exactly. Incremental aggregation only queries the systems for data that has physically changed since the last sync. It is lightweight and fast.
That makes sense.
You run incremental tasks every hour to catch promotions or terminations in near real time. And you run a full aggregation over the weekend to ensure your ledger is perfectly synchronized and no manual changes bypass the system.
I have a logistical question about how the system avoids breaking during these aggregations. Let's trace a real data flow. Okay?
Sure, lay it on me.
Say an employee gets married and changes their last name. They go into the HR portal and their name changes from Jane Smith to Joe Doe.
Happens every day.
Right. The system runs an incremental aggregation and pulls that new name. But their core IT login, their email address, is still J. Smith because IT doesn't want to break their inbox. How does the governance system not look at Jane Joe from HR and J. Smith from IT, assume they are two completely different people, and accidentally orphan the IT account?
That's a great question. The mechanism that prevents that disaster is identity correlation logic.
Correlation logic. How does it work?
When the data is pulled via the connector, the system doesn't rely on string matching the person's name. That would be a disaster. The correlation logic is programmed to look for a definitive primary key.
Like what?
A unique identifier, like an immutable employee ID number.
Yeah, I see. So the logic dictates, ignore the first and last name strings, If the employee ID from the HR database matches the employee ID metadata attached to the Active Directory account, snap them together into the same identity cube.
Precisely. It correlates disparate accounts to a single human entity. And once that correlation happens, a managed attribute refresh task fires off.
What does that do?
It sees the new HR data, updates the specific attributes within the identity cube, and recalculates all the dynamic roles without creating a duplicate identity.
That is incredibly elegant. And the source points out that depending on how complex an enterprise is, they might deploy different architectures of this platform.
Right. There are a few flavors.
There is Identity IQ, which is their traditional, highly customizable on-premises software for companies with incredibly complex, custom-coded legacy environments. Then there is Identity Now, a pure cloud SaaS product for organizations that don't want to manage their own servers. And finally, the Identity Security Cloud, their next-generation enterprise platform.
And that shift toward Identity Security Cloud is where the entire industry is heading.
Why is that?
It moves away from just executing static, hard-coded rules and introduces vast amounts of artificial intelligence and machine learning into the analytics engine. The goal is to predict risk before an administrator even logs in.
So let's look back at the journey we've taken today. We started with a manual nightmare of waiting weeks for email access, and we've mapped out the highly automated, ruthlessly enforced machinery that replaced it.
It's a completely different world now.
It really is. We look at how identity cubes act as the ultimate ledger, how role mining uses statistical analysis to build RBAC profiles, and how zero trust and segregation of duties prevent a company from being destroyed from the inside.
And we dug into the actual plumbing, too. How bean shell scripts, incremental aggregation, and correlation logic handle the massive data loads required to keep hundreds of legacy and cloud systems perfectly synchronized.
The next time you log into a corporate self-service portal, request access to a new dashboard, and magically get an alert 5 minutes later saying you're approved, you can appreciate the insane amount of logic, compliance checking, and automated provisioning grinding away in the background. So what does this all mean?
It fundamentally means that identity governance is no longer just an IT support function. It is the absolute tip of the spear for corporate security. The traditional network perimeter is dead. I mean, people work from coffee shops on personal devices. The identity itself is the new perimeter.
We want to leave you with a final thought to mull over, building on that shift toward AI. We mentioned that next-generation systems use machine learning to analyze user behavior.
Right. Tracking everything.
Exactly. They track exactly what files you open, what databases you query, and what applications you rely on to succeed. They're getting to the point where they can predict exactly what access you need before you even realize you need it.
And it raises a slightly unnerving question about the future of work.
How so?
Well, if an AI governance system perfectly understands the exact digital tools you utilize every single minute of your workday to achieve your specific output, at what point does the system understand your job function better than human resources does?
Right. Will we reach a point where your manager doesn't write your job description, but instead the AI analyzes your identity cube's daily telemetry and tells the company what your job actually is?
It's entirely possible.
It's a fascinating shift in how we define a worker. But one thing is certain. The days of relying on an IT guy typing out permissions or hoarding a legacy password for 5 years are completely over. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the architecture of digital access. We'll see you next time.